Welcome to this week's Ox Talk for Tuesday, the 1st of September, 2026. This week's news items from the local papers were selected by Mandy Wood and Bridget Dool and read by Stephen Harness and Bridget Dool. This week's edition was compiled by me, David Field, and the copying and the distribution of the USB sticks is by Michelle Lawful. Today's sunrise is at 6:15 a.m. and sunset is at 10 to 8 p.m. A few on-this-day items. In 1715, King Louis XIV of France dies after a reign of 72 years, the longest of any major European monarch. In 1939, I think you can guess this one, World War II starts when Germany invades Poland. And in 1972, the American chess grandmaster Bobby Fischer defeats Russian champion Boris Spassky in Reykjavik, in the most publicised world title match ever played. Fischer becomes the first American to win the title.
Conservationists have warned that Oxfordshire's adder population is on the brink of extinction. Following the confirmed extinction of the species in neighbouring Warwickshire, concerns have been raised about the future of Britain's only venomous snake in Oxfordshire. Experts say that the adder is now all but extinct in Oxfordshire, with records showing a sharp decline since the year 2000. The county's local nature recovery strategy indicates just one remaining population in the Chilterns, which was previously reintroduced. The last confirmed sighting in Oxfordshire was in 2015. The adder, known scientifically as Vipera berus, is considered very rare in the county. The local nature recovery strategy highlights several pressures on the species, including habitat loss, human disturbance, and predation by game birds. It has proposed measures to protect the remaining population, including creating and improving habitat mosaics and exploring reintroductions in the Chilterns or Cotswolds. Adders require a diverse mix of heathland, scrub, and woodland edges to thrive, with warm areas for basking and sheltered spots for hibernation.
Book flu jabs ahead of winter. The NHS is urging the public to start booking flu vaccination appointments ahead of the winter season. In a bid to help ease pressure on the health system, the NHS has begun preparing for the winter earlier than ever by opening its booking system. It means that eligible people like children and pregnant people will be able to get flu jabs from as early as September. Over the summer, the NHS treated a record number of patients following the 5 back-to-back heat waves. It is now urging the public to help ease the winter pressure and book flu jabs. Who can get a flu vaccine in September? In England, children and pregnant people can now book their flu jabs via the online booking portal, while in NHS Scotland and NHS Wales will be contacting those eligible for the flu vaccine from late August. People do need to wait for an invitation to book and can find appointments on the NHS website, NHS app, or by calling 119. Who should have the flu vaccine? The flu vaccine is offered to people who are at higher risk of getting seriously ill from the flu, according to the NHS. Although you can get the flu jab for free if you are eligible, if you are not, you can pay for a private appointment. Boots has already opened its booking system for flu appointments, which cost £21.95 and can be booked via its website.
New bus services are set to be created as a major road and route into Oxford is due to be reopened after 3 years' closure. Botley Road, the major route into the city from the west, is due to reopen on Sunday, September the 20th, after more than 3 years of full closure to rail. Go Thames Valley, the region's last bus operator, which oversees the Oxford Bus Company, Thames Travel, Carousel Buses and Pullums, will be introducing new routes and timetables across the city when the road reopens. They will build on new and existing contracts with Oxfordshire County Council to improve county-wide connectivity. A new 4 service will serve East Oxford between Risinghurst, Headington, the John Radcliffe Hospital, Oxford City Centre and Elms Rise every 30 minutes, replacing the Stagecoach Service 14 and combining with Oxford Bus Company's 4A route. Oxford Bus Company's 400 service will return to Seacourt Park and Ride, operating up to every 10 minutes alongside the 4B, which will be renumbered 200 and extended into Oxford. The 44 and 63/63S services will once again serve the city centre, calling at Speedwell Street, the West Gate and Frideswyde Square. The 6 and 35 routes will be combined into a new Cross City 6 service, operating between Abingdon, Radley, Kennington, Oxford City Centre and Wolvercote, up to every 20 minutes Monday to Saturday, and half hourly during the evenings and on Sundays. With support from Oxfordshire County Council, there will be a doubling of the frequency for the 5A on Sundays and a new Friday and Saturday late evening journey introduced on the 11 between Oxford City Centre and Watlington. To improve connections in Wood Farm, Oxford Bus Company's 15 service will complete a wider loop of the area, serving additional stops along Masons Road and Titup Hall Drive. Luke Marion, Managing Director of Go Thames Valley, said, "We're looking forward to finally being in a position to revamp our services in the Botley Road area. Following a successful tender process, we have expanded our network and worked closely with Oxfordshire County Council to deliver various improvements for Botley residents and the wider community." Timetable changes will include increasing the X15 service to every 30 minutes and continuing the buses to Standlake, Ducklington and Whitney every hour, replacing the X1. Thames Travel's X35 will also extend beyond Grove to East Hannay and Abingdon and operate every 30 minutes on weekdays. Councillor Gareth Epps, Oxfordshire County Council's Cabinet Member for Transport, said, "The reopening of the Botley Road will make bus travel much more attractive for more people once again." The reenactment of a battle in the English Civil War, complete with artillery, was cancelled with just days to go amid safety fears over the dry condition of the countryside. The organisers of the Battle of the Cotswolds reenactment, which was due to take place on Bank Holiday Sunday and Monday at the Great Tew Estate near Chipping Norton, announced that the event would no longer go ahead. More than 2,000 members of the Sealed Knot Society were set to perform, with the day supposed to include cannon fire, charging horses and a full battle reenactment. However, considering the lack of rain and very dry parkland, the reenactment group decided it could not go ahead. A spokesperson said, "It's with deep regret that the Sealed Knot has cancelled the reenactment of a battle from the English Civil War, a battle for the Cotswolds. In light of recent events, government advice and the safety of their membership and general public, the Sealed Knot Board of Directors felt compelled to make the difficult decision to cancel the event. There have been a number of wildfires around Oxfordshire in recent months as the county and wider UK experienced record temperatures. The battle reenactment between the parliamentarians and the royalists would have seen arena displays, including infantry, cavalry and, most significantly, artillery. The reenactment society cited the drought conditions which pose a high risk of wildfire, and the clear advice not to undertake any activity that could start a fire. They added, "Even with a possible rain forecast, we cannot be confident that the risk of fire and other associated risks will reduce significantly before the bank holiday weekend. We recognise that the emergency services are currently overstretched and applaud the wonderful job they're doing. We do not want to add to the stress and strains on them." The spokesperson added, "All members of the public who have already bought tickets will be refunded as soon as possible."
The Royal Shakespeare Company has given its verdict on a new theme park near Bicester. It joins a growing list to support Puy de Fou including Visit Britain, Blenheim Palace, the British Tourist Authority and Experience Oxfordshire. The French Leisure Group has formal proposals to Chartwell District Council for a £600 million historic-themed live-action show park near Bucknell. As part of the proposals, it would include 13 major theatrical performances highlighting British history, 4 themed villages with accommodation and facilities. Rob Hayes, Director of Commercial and Visitor Operations, and Jackie O'Hanlon, Deputy Executive Director of the Royal Shakespeare Company, have both thrown their weight behind Puy de Fou. In a public letter, they said, "We believe the proposed development represents an exciting opportunity to further enhance the UK's cultural and tourism offer. There is currently no equivalent attraction operating at this scale within the UK, and we can see the potential for the project to attract new visitors to the region, generate economic activity and contribute to the continued growth of the visitor economy across the Midlands and surrounding areas. We are particularly encouraged by the potential for collaboration across the cultural, tourism, hospitality and education sectors. Major attractions often act as catalysts for wider partnerships, helping other organisations work together to create richer visitor experiences and strengthen the overall appeal of a destination. It is believed that by Puy de Fou that its theme park would bring 1.47 million visitors each year once it's fully developed, starting with an anticipated 550,000 guests in its first year after opening in 2029. Around 2,000 people would be employed on site, while an additional 6,000 jobs in hotels, restaurants and supply chains would be supported. Meanwhile, the bus company Stagecoach and Oxford Bus Company have both supported the scheme too. David O'Leary, Stagecoach's commercial director, said the firm would be flexible with the 500 service from Banbury to Bicester to increase frequencies, and an integrated digital ticketing service could be made between Stagecoach and Puy de Fou to speed up travelling to the park via bus. Blenheim Palace Chief Executive Dominic Hare also recently wrote to Chartwell District Council calling the project a significant strategic opportunity that brings genuine variety, jobs and lasting and economic benefits to the region.
Campaigners have shared a warning about Oxford's, quote, nasty welcoming gift, unquote, to visitors after a man reported receiving over £200 in fines in one day on the city roads. This comes amid concern that independent businesses are losing out on custom across the city, with reports that drivers are avoiding it amid fear of being fined under Oxfordshire County Council's traffic regulations. It follows the revelation that by the time it's replaced by traffic filters, the congestion charge is on track to raise £7.7 million surplus from a £5 a day charges and fines, more than £4 million more than originally predicted. In a Facebook post, Mark Clegg said, "Visited Oxford for the day as a family in two cars. No idea of the congestion or bus lane charges." He said the family received two penalty charge notices and hire car company fees for the infringements. Mark said, £225 full charge for two cars visiting for the day. We will not be coming back to Oxford." He is not the first to have made this assertion. In July, Wheatley residents said that they had been driving to Milton Keynes to shop rather than coming to Oxford due to its traffic regulations. Coming from further afield, Taunton musician Andy Williams, 61, vowed not to return after getting hit by a low-traffic neighbourhood fine when he travelled into the city in May for a gig at the Bullingdon with his indie folk punk band, the Jamestown Brothers. Jeff Sutton, a spokesperson for Reconnecting Oxford, grassroots transport campaign group, said, "First-time visitors to Oxford typically get a nasty welcoming gift from the council of a £70 fine." He described the situation faced by Mark's family as a typical example, adding, "They won't be coming back to Oxford and the reputational damage to Oxford keeps accumulating." County Transport boss Gareth Epps said, "All restrictions on traffic into Oxford are visible to motorists and align with national regulations. The High Street bus gate has been in place for over two decades. If drivers ignore signs, they're liable to face fines and other actions. A spokesperson for the County Council explained that there are multiple signs warning drivers at and on the routes approaching each of the congestion charging points. They added, there is also a wealth of information about the temporary congestion charging scheme on our website, which includes detailed maps showing where each charging point is located. Many journeys to and around the city don't even need to go through a charging point. The majority of visitors to Oxford city centre arrive by non-car modes. The temporary congestion charge has allowed us to enhance travel options, including the £3 combined park and ride ticket that covers return travel for up to 5 people.
Flooded streets can't be blamed on the County Council. A councillor has claimed flooded streets and blocked drains are not the fault of the local authority, despite a huge cutback in gutter cleaning. Drains blocked by leaves, previously cleaned up by council workers, have been cited as a major contribution to flooding. The councillor has recently gone from cleaning gullies once every 4 years to annually. Yet Nathan Lee, Oxfordshire County Councillor for Abingdon North, said that while the county's streets may flood this winter, it won't be the fault of his council. He said the authority spent £2.6 million on drainage programme and took 2,346 tonnes of silt out of the Oxfordshire's drainage networks. He also insisted new developments weren't to blame, with ponds and swales holding surface water, and if built properly, these should hold water back and release it slowly. He instead blamed the weather, claiming the recent decade has seen the weather from October to March 13% wetter than the 1961 to 1990 period. He said, the number of months where county records at least twice its normal monthly rainfall has gone up by over half. Last winter, 2025 to 26, was England's eighth wettest since records began in 1836, and southern England's fourth wettest. He also argued the frequency intensity of the weather and the way soil holds this intense weather is to blame, not the council. He said, one in 50-year event becoming a one in 20-year event doesn't feel like a change while you're living through it. He also points towards companies as another party to blame in the increasing flooding, saying our drainage, our surface sewers, built and looked after by water companies, was designed to a standard. Whatever you believe is causing it, the rainfall system was built for is not the rainfall it's now getting. September 2024 in Oxford was the wettest month in 250 years, with councillors at the time arguing that Oxford was built at the near head of a river system. However, a large amount of flooding is still the council's responsibility, with Oxfordshire County Council responsible for fixing drainage and flooding issues on roads across Oxfordshire. The County Council is also responsible for the management of flood risk from surface water, groundwater and ordinary watercourses. While this doesn't mean it will undertake the works to fix flooding issues, the Council can investigate landowners who are responsible for floods.
A young boy from Oxford set a new kids' world record for the longest time spent doing jumping jacks, also called star jumps. James's achievement, officially recorded on August 23rd, has earned him a place in the 2027 edition of the Kids World Records book. Emil Hoffman, CEO of Kids World Records, said, James's achievement is exactly the kind of creativity and determination we love to see. We're thrilled to welcome James into the KWR family. This record will be featured in our 2027 edition, and we hope it inspires even more kids around the world to dream big and break records. James is described as an energetic child who loves football and constantly seeks new challenges. His latest accomplishment not only showcases his personal determination, but also highlights the potential of young people in Oxford and beyond. Kids World Records, founded in 2020, is a global platform that celebrates the achievements of children aged 4 to 16. It has recognised young record holders in more than 66 countries and will publish its seventh annual record book in October 2026. All record attempts are reviewed by KWR judge and confirmed by a master judge. Records must be safe, measurable, verifiable, and repeatable. Participation is free for families, schools, and communities. A group working to tackle homelessness in the county has welcomed the Prime Minister's plan to provide rough sleepers a route off the streets by Christmas. Homeless Oxfordshire has praised the initiative, which is a repeat of efforts during the coronavirus pandemic. The scheme successfully took thousands of rough sleepers off the streets. The government has committed to offering everyone a route off the streets this Christmas, although it's understood that not every rough sleeper might take up the offer. Homeless Oxfordshire acknowledged the welcome show of political will, but stressed the importance of planning for the long term. The commitment to provide safe accommodation this winter is backed by an additional £102 million on top of the £340 million announced in July. The charity highlighted that while Oxfordshire, like much of the country, has seen an increase in rough sleeping, the national effort to get people off the streets this Christmas deserves genuine welcome. However, the charity is urging the government and local partners to learn from previous Everyone In initiatives. The original scheme during the pandemic brought thousands indoors and prevented deaths, but progress was undone once emergency funding ended and many failed to secure settled housing opportunities. Homeless Oxfordshire cautioned that a short-term winter offer without a clear route into settled, genuinely affordable housing beyond Christmas risks repeating that pattern. Homeless Oxfordshire provides temporary accommodation, while direct outreach to rough sleepers is delivered by its local partners such as St Mungo's. These organisations will be central to making any delivery of the new initiative successful. The charity stressed the importance of funding reaching these frontline organisations quickly, with the flexibility to respond to Oxfordshire's specific pressures, including the shortage of move-on accommodation in the county. Simon Hewitt-Averson, CEO of Homeless Oxfordshire, said, "Nobody should be sleeping rough this Christmas, and we welcome the Prime Minister's determination to make sure of that. This kind of national leadership matters, and it echoes what we saw during the pandemic, when swift action undoubtedly saves lives." He added, however, the real test will be what happens in January and beyond.
Allotments are helping new community take root. The retired couple has praised Wallingford Allotments for bringing people together. Nick and Sue Jones, who live at Berkeley's Highcroft development, were amongst the first to be given a plot at the site, which was delivered as part of the landscape-led scheme and later transferred to Wallingford Town Council. Nick and Sue Jones said the allotments have created a really friendly community. People look out for one another and are always willing to share advice or lend a hand, whether that means discussing what to grow, identifying something found on a plot, or keeping somebody's crops watered whilst they're away. Some people have years of gardening experience and others are learning as they go, so there's always knowledge being passed around. We all tend our own plots, but nobody feels as though they are doing it alone. They now tend to two adjoining 50 square metre plots, just 5 minutes walk from their home. At the request of Wallingford Town Council, the couple set up a WhatsApp group to connect plot holders, which has been since become a hub for advice, support and neighbourly help. The group shares tips on crops, pests and wildlife, but also offers practical support. Members water each other's plants during holidays and help identify plants or solve problems. That spirit recently extended to a family of partridges that made its home on one of the allotments, with members sharing updates as the eggs hatched and the 12 chicks eventually fledged. Nick and Sue Jones said the partridges captured everyone's attention, people kept an eye on them and shared updates with the group, so the whole community was able to follow their progress. There's always something happening at the allotments. We hear lots of different birdsong and get the most amazing deep pink and orange sunsets, but being able to share those experiences with other people is what makes it particularly special. Their granddaughter regularly helps the plot watering plants and tasting strawberries. Sue Jones said, "You are always learning however long you have been gardening, and it's lovely to be able to pass that knowledge on." The allotments are used by families with children as well as more experienced gardeners, so people of different ages can learn from one another. The couple say the biggest benefit has been becoming part of the community. They say, "We moved to Highcroft to be closer to family and because Wallingford has so much to offer. The allotments have helped us get to know people from the development and the wider town."
Oxfordshire councillors are campaigning to stop the closure of a dangerous level crossing. Network Rail have announced plans to close Roundham Level Crossing in Kidlington near Roundham Lock and Langford Lane. Oxfordshire Liberal Democrats, including MP Callum Miller, argue the closure of the crossing would cut off a whole community. The councillors describe the crossing as a vital link for residents in northwest Kidlington, connecting them to important routes including the Oxford Canal towpath and Begbroke Bridleway. This recently completed footpath and cycleway was specifically designed to provide safe, accessible routes between Kidlington and Begbroke Science Park. However, the crossing was the site of a fatal accident in 2014 when a 22-year-old from Bletchingdon was struck by a train. More recently, a Kidlington resident was also fatally injured on the level crossing in February. Network Rail first announced plans to close the crossing after a planning application was submitted to Cherwell District Council for 300 homes near the crossing in 2024. Hallam Land Management submitted the application for the homes at the former piggery and land north of Woodstock Road, Yarnton, in 2024. In the planning application submitted, it is likely that occupants of the new homes would need to regularly use the crossing to access Kidlington if they wanted to walk or cycle. In the outline planning application, Oxfordshire Liberal Democrats said, "The closure of the Roundham Level Crossing will reduce options for walking and cycling between settlements, which are of key importance in meeting the aspirations of these housing allocations in the Greenbelt." In the planning application, Network Rail proposed a condition that no homes could be built until the crossing was closed or rediverted. In response, the council said, "The County Council had understood that the form of crossing at Roundham was one of the safest. However, it is for Network Rail to assess the level of potential risk." The council also proposed a new access bridge to be built around Sandy Lane, although they have since said that access points would be too far away for occupants. The council have insisted that Network Rail should identify and fund an accessible alternative that preserves the canal maintenance access routes and does not significantly worsen routes for local residents. A model railway club that has been delighting enthusiasts for six decades is inviting the public to celebrate its 60th anniversary at a free open day in Oxford. Oxford and District Model Railway Club, founded in 1966 with 40 members, will mark the milestone with an open day on Saturday, September the 12th, from 10:30 to 4 p.m. at the United Reformed Church Hall in Collinwood Road, Risinghurst. Visitors will be able to see a range of layouts spanning scales from Z gauge to zero gauge, while children and adults will have the chance to operate some of the displays themselves. Kev Brett of the club said, "Reaching the anniversary was a reflection of members' dedication over the years." He said, "It's a wonderful achievement and shows the enthusiasm and commitment of members." Among the highlights will be two layouts that are more than 60 years old and are still exhibited today. One of them, Bossingdon, now housed by Mr. Brett, was built by the late founder Les Eden. It imagines what the village might have looked like if it had been served by the Great Western Railway. Mr. Brett said the layout remains popular at expert exhibitions.
Congestion charge, the damage in numbers. With £7.7 million surplus set to be raised, campaigners have questioned whether the objectives of the congestion charge have been met and its repercussions. On September 28th, After the reopening of Botley Road, the congestion charge is set to end and a six-month traffic filter trial will begin. Data about the impact of the scheme has been analysed by the campaign groups, which have shared their concerns about what they found. Oxford Business Action Group, OBAG, spokesman Peter West said, "While bus usage has increased and city congestion reduced, the charge has had a dramatic effect on local businesses, cycling reduced and journey times on the ring road have increased." He said, looking at June monitoring data, the group found that the council have received nearly £7 million in total for their congestion charge scheme to date, having received £1.3 million in June alone. Peter added, "Unfortunately, there is little data on footfall, but the data supplied by the Oxfordshire County Council shows footfall in Queen Street only reduced by an average of 3.4%, but the data for June 2026 shows a reduction of 14.7%. The analysis shows that whilst one of the council's objectives was to increase cycling, it is actually reduced by 7.4%. An additional and forecast impact of the congestion charge is the significant increases of traffic journey times on the sections of the road at certain times of the day. He added, an additional and forecast impact of the congestion charge is significant increases of traffic journey times on sections of the road at certain times of the day, with more than 20% increases at Hinksey Hill, Kennington, Hayford Hill, Cutterslow and Wolvercote roundabouts, all of which must persuade drivers not to come to Oxford to shop. With this data as context, another group, Reconnecting Oxford, questioned the welcome being given by city visitors under the scheme this summer. Jeff Sutton said, "Reconnecting Oxford is not surprised to hear that 9 months after its introduction, the congestion charges income is well above the projected level that the council itself forecast." He added, "Local businesses are also losing out. The council's own figures show footfall and spending is down. The cause of the drop is clear. Many Oxfordshire residents are now avoiding our city, with many potential first-time visitors vowing to avoid Oxford after reading about what happened to those who did and who got fined. Ironically, the council's predicted increase in cycling following the congestion charge introduction has also not happened. The reality is that cycling levels are down significantly. We ask, who will hold this council to account for the damage they've caused?"
An Oxford University college has revealed its plans to buy a building on the edge of its city centre site and turn it into more student halls. St Peter's College submitted a proposal to Oxford City Council, revealing its intention to buy the building at 11 New Road, extend it into the college site, and replace the nail bar it houses with new student accommodation. The building, opposite the soon-to-be-redeveloped Oxfordshire County Council headquarters, County Hall, currently houses off-licence Castle News and barber shop Classy Barbers on its ground floor. Both shops would remain under the college's plans, but Nail Bar American Nails on the first floor would be renovated and turned into permanent student flats. The second floor of the building is already leased to St Peter's College and used as a six-bedroom HMO, but this would soon also be renovated to accommodate more bedrooms under the new plan. The college indicated in the plan that it is seeking to buy the building contingent on viable planning permission, to take the current offering of 6 student bedrooms to 24, with 8 on each floor, plus shared bathrooms and kitchens, and amenity space in the basement. It also plans to extend the front of the building by 1.06 metres into the St Peter's College grounds behind New Road, giving it a new 1930s arts and crafts style to match the adjacent Stokes Pastry School building and other areas of the college. A Banbury United fan's legacy is making a difference in West Africa. Simon Pierce, who had a lifelong commitment to and involvement with Banbury United, died earlier this year. And his collection of Banbury United football shirts is now being worn by young footballers in Sierra Leone. After Mr. Pierce's untimely death, The shirts were collected from his flat and passed on through Alan Woolstonecroft of the Rotary Club. They were then sent to Sierra Leone, where they've been gratefully received by local footballers. Comprising shirts from various seasons, the collection serves as a tribute to Mr. Pearce's dedication to his favourite football team. A spokesman shared photographs and said Simon would have been over the moon to see his beloved United shirts being worn on the continent.
Royal expert questions Meghan's rural move. Meghan Markle will not enjoy life in the Cotswolds if she and Prince Harry relocate, a royal biographer has claimed. Andrew Loney, who has written several books on the royal family, cast doubt on the Duchess of Sussex's ability to settle onto British rural life during an appearance on the Daily Tea podcast. Mr. Loney said, "I can't see Meghan enjoying a Cotswolds winter with the rain coming down and her mother a long way away, so I just can't see this working. It is understood the Duke and Duchess of Sussex plan to move back to the UK by the end of the month with their children, Prince Archie and Princess Lilibet, who are expected to start at British schools in September. The couple are thought to be considering a move to the Cotswolds and recently took their children to visit King Charles at his Highgrove home in July. The King is said to welcome the chance to see more of the family in private and personal capacity, but the Sussexes' official status will remain unchanged and they will not be offered a half-in, half-out role. Mr. Loney has also discussed what the move might reveal about the couple's relationship dynamics. He suggested their apparent decision to leave behind their American lifestyle surprised even King Charles. The Sussexes will keep their home in Montecito, California, and Portugal, whilst Meghan continues to run her lifestyle brand as ever.
Girl Guiding Organisation banned any new transgender women or girls from being able to join the groups from December 2025, clarifying that those still in groups had until September this year to leave. The decision faced severe criticism at the time. A spokesperson for Girl Guiding said, "This decision was made to make sure we were operating lawfully and follow our governing charity documents, which affect how our membership eligibility is defined." Girl Guiding shared further operational information with our members about the timings for this change. The update explained that current young members who are trans girls can stay with Girl Guiding until the 6th of September 2026. This allows affected members and their families time to plan, prepare, access support, and decide when they feel ready to leave. "We want the forthcoming Equalities and Human Rights Commission, EHRC, guidance to be clear, workable, and informed by the voices of young people and volunteering organisations to ensure that the well-being of all girls remains at its heart." Girl Guiding exists to empower girls and young women and help create a more equal world. Our values and beliefs have not changed. Despite the ban on transgender women and girls, the organisation claims it is committed to supporting marginalised community, including the LGBTQ+ people, to improve the lives of girls. The organisation confirmed that they would lose their charitable status if they did not comply with the guidelines. Speaking at her own investiture in April, the chief guide at Girl Guiding UK, Tracy Foster, said, "We need to advocate for girls-only space and for safe spaces for girls and young women and for us adult women too." Whilst declining to say if she personally agreed with the court's ruling, she said the change in Girl Guiding policy is something we've had to do because we have to be lawful, and the Supreme Court made that decision. Girl Guide members can range in age from 4 to 18, with about 300,000 members across the Rainbows, Brownies, Guides and Ranger groups. The organisation completely redesigned its uniform across all groups this summer for the first time in 30 years. The new uniform is now a focus on self-expression, belonging and confidence. The new range also comes with relaxed rules, with members only having to wear a top to meetings and activities to feel more comfortable.
A cat has made a miraculous recovery and survived being shot in the neck with an air gun. Rosie, a pet cat from Manor Road in Whitchurch-on-Thames in South Oxfordshire, returned home injured around midday on August the 16th after being last seen in good health earlier that morning. She was found staggering in the garden and her owner rushed her to an emergency vet. X-rays revealed she had been shot with an air gun pellet which was lodged in her neck. Kristin Omred, an inspector with the RSPCA, said this was a terrifying ordeal for poor Rosie and her owner. She had been seen earlier in the morning completely well, so it was such a shock for her owner when she returned home just a few hours later, having sustained such awful injuries. Thankfully, the pellet was able to be removed and Rosie survived, but she will need ongoing veterinary treatment as she recovers. The RSPCA believes the shooting likely happened close to Rosie's home, as she does not tend to roam far. The charity is now appealing for information from the public. Anyone with information is asked to contact the RSPCA's inspectorate line on 0300 123 8018, quoting incident 0188 4707.
A new pharmacy serving an Oxford community has been officially opened after a campaign from locals, councillors and the area's MP. Littlemore Pharmacy officially opened its doors in Cowley Road on Monday the 24th of August, with pharmacist Abdi Hassan now providing convenient access to services for locals. It comes after complaints that access to healthcare in Littlemore was simply not good enough after the last pharmacy in Littlemore on Cowley Road closed in April 2023. Councillor David Henwood, who supported the opening of the pharmacy, said, "It's fantastic to see the new Littlemore Pharmacy officially open its doors. This has been a project I've been very keen to support, because having good local services within walking distance makes a real difference to residents. Today is about celebrating the hard work that's gone into getting the pharmacy open, and most importantly, giving residents another valuable service right here in Littlemore. I would like to congratulate Mr. Hassan and his team and wish them every success for the future. I'm sure the pharmacy will quickly become an important part of our community." Permission was granted by the Buckinghamshire, Oxfordshire and Berkshire West Integrated Care Board for the new service provider in June 2025, and an appeal against it launched by the Henley Avenue Healthcare Limited, who run Doddington Pharmacy, was dismissed in December 2025. The NHS Board noted in a report that 25% of Littlemore residents do not have access to a car, and the neighbourhood falls into the 20% most deprived areas in England, and received personal letters from residents describing how difficult they found it to access pharmacies. Mr. Hassan, the owner of Littlemore Pharmacy, said he was delighted to open their doors. "We could not have delivered the pharmacy without the support of Anne Storrs and David Henwood, the councillors, who both gave evidence at the NHS hearing and made a particular contribution to the case for bringing this much-needed service to Littlemore," he said. "Their support, alongside that of local residents and others who've recognised the importance of having a pharmacy in the community, was greatly appreciated. Our aim is to provide a friendly, professional and accessible service for the people of Littlemore. We want residents to feel that this is their local pharmacy and somewhere they can come for advice and support."
This week there are two memories in John Chipperfield's regular feature Memory Lane. The first about a time capsule, the second road safety. Pupils at Sandhill Primary School in Oxford can expect a surprise in 2040. A time capsule was buried in the grounds when the school in Terrett Avenue, Headington, reached 50 years old in 1990. Assuming a record is being kept showing its location, there is a good chance it will be dug up at the centenary celebrations in 14 years' time. Pupils and perhaps teachers will learn about life in the past. Oxford East MP Andrew Smith and Headmaster Joe Johnson contributed to the capsule's contents with a cricket ball and tennis ball.
The capsule also included 30 letters written by pupils, leaflets about the national curriculum, a teenage magazine, and a T-shirt for future head teacher, just to tell those in future generations what life was like half a century earlier. The school had a fascination for recording history at that time. It celebrated the 50th anniversary, not only looking forward 50 years, but turning the clock back 50 years. Pupils dressed themselves in 1940s uniforms, and desks were neatly arranged across the classrooms with wide enough gaps for the teacher to walk from the blackboard to the back, as they did in the old days. There were exercise books and pencils on the desks, and pupils drank their daily dose of free milk in the third of a pint milk bottles through straws. To add to the wartime atmosphere, school cooks served 1940s style food in the canteen, and pupils pretended to be wartime evacuees. There was at least one other occasion where the traditional lessons at school took a back seat. In 1987, many arrived dressed as storybook characters. Pupils used to take their stride riding their bikes to and from school. When little traffic about in those days, many parents were happy for their offspring to set off in the morning and return home in the afternoon, confident that they would be safe in the saddle. However, it was sensible to make sure that they knew how to ride and observe the rules on the road, and that bikes were in good condition. Many councils had road safety committees which would encourage children to take the National Cycling Proficiency Test. Often police would get involved to promote the safety message. The Oxford Mail, under the headline, "Take a Tip from P.C. Rigsby," reported a visit to children at Cowley Street Christopher's First School, saying, "The long but friendly arm of the law visited the school with a road safety advice for the young pupils. P.C. Frank Rigsby, whose 9-year-old son Elliot is a pupil, was invited to take part in the school's Safer on the Streets week. For 5 days, the children had been doing special road safety projects, drawing safety posters and carrying out traffic censuses to try stop them becoming accident casualties. The week ended with parents being invited to coffee and a talk on road safety with their children. Headmaster Bernard Derwin said, "It has been a good effort and something new. It is a good way of getting children to think about road safety." 8 years earlier, in 1965, at Rose Hill Primary School at the Oval, Rose Hill, in Oxford, children created their own model of potential hazards, including at pedestrian crossings, road junctions and traffic lights. Oxford Deputy Chief Constable Superintendent Leonard North paid a visit to the school to see what pupils had done. All 250 pupils had contributed to the model. The result was so good that it had been decided to display it at the town hall in St Aldate's as part of an exhibition organised by the city's road safety organisation. These were the days when Oxford had its own police force based at St Aldate's police station. Thames Valley Police, incorporating the city and neighbouring forces, was formed in 1968.
A Land Rover was stolen overnight from a village in a keyless attack, police have said. The theft took place in Brewerne, a hamlet on the Avon Lode River near Chipping Norton, overnight on Sunday the 23rd of August. Investigating the crime, Thames Valley Police said the circumstances suggest that the thieves used a relay attack, a method where cars can be accessed and stolen without needing keys. This is a type of hacking that allows criminals to capture and extend the signals from a keyless car key inside the home, with one person standing near the home with a device to pick up the signal, and a second one standing near the vehicle to trick it into unlocking because the key appears to be nearby. This can allow thieves to unlock and even start the car without having the key. Thames Valley Police issued advice to people with keyless cars to help keep them safe to protect their vehicles. This includes using a signal blocking pouch, keeping keys away from doors and windows, using a steering wheel lock as a deterrent, a vehicle tracker, consider turning off the keyless entry function if it's not needed, and layer security, such as by installing driveway CCTV. A spokesperson for the police added, If you see anyone acting suspiciously around vehicles or properties, please report it to the police. If you believe a vehicle theft is taking place at that moment, call 999.
E-bike law, a terrible error as seizures surge by 160%. Police seizures of e-bikes have rocketed 160% in a year as calls are being made to make city riders have number plates. Thames Valley officers took 425 e-bikes off the road while on duty last year from the 163 e-bikes seized the year prior. Recently, in northeast Oxford, neighbourhood policemen have been responding to concerns from residents about riders using e-scooters and e-bikes on roads, pavements and other public areas. PCSO Joshua Tedstone said, "We continue to receive concerns about residents regarding the use of these vehicles on the roads, pavements and other public areas, including reports of dangerous riding, excessive speeds and antisocial behaviour. The North East Oxford Neighbourhood Policing Team will be taking robust action against the illegal use of e-scooters and e-bikes across the area." Last month, Oxford City Council leader Susan Brown agreed to write to the government urging for swift action and stronger enforcement against riders who break the law, relevant employers and those who enable illegal activity. Journalist, author and Oxford resident Peter Hitchens said e-bikes are ridden by people who want the benefits of driving a car but without having to follow the law of the road. He told BBC Radio 4 over the weekend, "People who ride e-bikes are not cyclists. They are people who want all the freedom of the motor car without any of the restrictions. Make them carry number plates. Make them be insured. Make them pass a test, and I promise you most of these problems will disappear in a matter of weeks. The whole point of them is that if you ride them, you are completely free to break the law. The same is more or less true of e-scooters. It's been a terrible mistake. It's easily ended by somebody bringing them back inside traffic laws. We've had this country since the 1930s. Under the UK law, legal e-bikes are known as electrically assisted pedal cycles and must meet certain safety regulations, such as their electric motor having a maximum power of 250 watts and cutting out when a speed of 15.5 miles per hour is reached. Many illegal e-bikes confiscated by the police have been modified to travel much faster, some exceeding 70 miles per hour. Non-compliant machines are effectively electric mopeds are motorbikes which must be registered, taxed and insured. While major retailers sell thousands of illegal e-bikes every year, many illegal machines are bought on the internet. Kits which add an electric motor to a conventional bike are available online for under £300. As well as being used for crime, illegal e-bikes are often used for legitimate journeys such as food deliveries and commuting. A government spokesman said illegal e-bikes that can reach dangerous speeds have no place on our roads and pavements, and the rise in seizures show the scale of the problem police are dealing with. That's why we have strengthened police powers, changing the law so that officers no longer need to issue a warning before seizing these vehicles where they are used antisocially.
Oxfordshire Fire and Rescue Service were called to a field fire at 5:40 on land opposite Redbridge Park and Ride on Tuesday the 25th of August. Three fire engines worked until 8 p.m. to extinguish the blaze using high-pressure hose reels and beaters to prevent further spread. Part of Abingdon Road off the A34 Eastern Bypass was closed, temporarily suspending buses from using the stop. Oxford Bus Company buses, including the X40, 300 and X1, could be seen lining the A4144 as they were unable to access the park and ride. Instead, the Bertie Place bus stops in Old Abingdon Road were used as an alternative. The fire service said the cause is unknown at this time, but it being started deliberately has not been ruled out. Thames Valley Police said officers were made aware of criminal damage incident around there at approximately 7:30 p.m. Fortunately, there were no injuries and no arrests have been made. The case has been filed pending further inquiries. Anna Railton, Labour Deputy Leader at Oxford City Council, told the Oxford Mail that the council-owned site had been flagged as a fire risk and the grass should be cut, but her response was no. The dry grassland where horses used to graze is believed to be a council-owned field where the local planning authority is looking to build a big estate of flats and homes under the city-owned housing company Oxplace. The ditch between Rivermead Estate and the Burnt Heath Estate was already scheduled to be cleared out before this. However, Ms. Railton claimed that this work hadn't been completed yet. The City Council has been contacted for comment. And she said, "Massive thanks to the fire service who did a great job getting this blaze under control so quickly. It's important to find out what caused it before coming to any conclusions. This is a City Council-owned site earmarked for development, which is fenced off with no public access over it. Clearly, we need to look at how this site is managed before its development in light of this fire. It's a tricky ex-landfill site, and we will seek advice about the best way to minimise fire risk on it, which might be mowing or it might not. It's a very stark reminder that we all need to be careful in dry conditions not to cause a fire. They can get out of control quickly and put lives in danger." A pickpocket warning has been issued for Oxfordshire residents travelling to and from London. Passengers regularly travelling from Oxford to London could get the Great Western Railway train to Paddington Station. This train is often the fastest and most economical of the trains running. However, it stops at Reading Station. Passengers on the Great Western Railway train are now warned of the dangers of regular pickpockets and bag thefts at Reading Station. The announcement, which regularly comes over the tannoy on the train, also warns passengers not getting off at Reading Station to watch their bags on the train. A spokesperson for Great Western Railway said, "The announcement is part of its standard automated messaging and plays across the networks, particularly at its busier stations. The company assured it is not in response to any specific increase in theft at Reading. But Reading Railway Station is repeatedly named as one of the worst in the UK for pickpocketing incidents." Research from the luggage storage network Bounce.com revealed that Reading previously placed fourth for pickpocketing offences in the UK, with Birmingham, Leeds and Manchester ranking higher. Great Western Railway also had the third highest amounts of baggage thefts for any train line in the UK, according to Money Supermarket. The Cottesmore Footbridge, which is a bridge over the ring road near the Sainsbury's Hayford Hill branch, remains undecided despite demolition still being considered. Oxfordshire County Council has confirmed it is carrying out an options appraisal to determine the most appropriate long-term solution for the bridge. The post-tensioned footbridge, which spans the busy A4142 Oxford Eastern Bypass, was built in 1963 and provides a route for pedestrians and cyclists. However, a structural review classified it as an immediate risk in April 2026 before it was ultimately closed in May. The bridge was identified as a potential collapse risk after corrosion and deterioration in the bridge's post-tensioning system were found in 2012. This was compounded by concerns from 2023 onwards that footfall-induced bouncing could trigger a sudden structural failure. A spokesperson said, "Demolition remains one of the options being considered. However, it is not the only option under review. Other options being assessed by engineers include retaining and strengthening the existing structure, as well as full replacement. The purpose of the study is to evaluate the feasibility, benefits, risks, and indicative costs associated with each option. The findings will be presented in a report to support us in selecting the preferred way forward."
Revealed, Clarkson's Green Lawn Secret. Drone pictures show the secret way in which Jeremy Clarkson keeps his lawn looking at its best at his Cotswolds pub. Lush green lawns at the Farmer's Dog in Astle, near Burford, are in stark contrast to the drought-hit fields surrounding it. The Clarkson's Farm Presenter's Pub on the A40 is subject to a hosepipe ban like the rest of Oxfordshire that was put in place last month by Thames Water. But in stark contrast to the brown and scorched fields surrounding the Cotswolds venue, drinkers at the popular boozer have been able to sit amongst plush green grass despite the ban and recent lack of rain. Mr. Clarkson defended his appearance and spoke out after criticism was aimed at other celebrities on how they were able to beat the ban and defy the drought. Among those was Rod Stewart's sprawling grounds in Essex, which prompted some question how they'd managed to keep their lawns so green. Mr. Clarkson, who bought and renovated the former Windmill Pub and reopened it as the Farmer's Dog in August 2024, defended the singer amid the criticism and revealed his own tactic for keeping his pub lawn looking healthy. He revealed in his newspaper column the secret way to keep his lawn looking green. He wrote, "An aerial photograph of the lush green lawns around Rod Stewart's sprawling mansion in Essex prompted the nation's bitter people to ask, how do you manage to make that, mate, when there's a hosepipe ban in force? Well, let's think, could it be, perhaps, that Rod, here with wife Penny, probably has a borehole? It's not a difficult concept to get your head around. You dig a hole, maybe 100 metres down, into the ground, put a pump into it, and the water comes out, water that's not subject to any kind of government interference. That's what we did at my pub, which is why the lawns there are so weirdly verdant. The hosepipe ban was brought in following the prolonged period of dry weather, which has continued into August, with temperatures staying high consistently. Mr. Clarkson also owns Diddley Squat Farm near Chadlington, which has become famous through Prime Video series Clarkson's Farm."
That was the last of our local news items for this week. If you have any comments or feedback about OxTalk, we now have a new landline number for you to call. The number is 01865 377635. That's 01865 377635. Please leave a message for Michelle, our listener coordinator, or you can call Margaret on 07496 06 2280. That's 07496 062280. And please remember to leave your name and a contact number with your message. Or you can send an email to mail@oxtalk.org.uk. This edition and those from the previous 4 weeks are available on our website. That's www.oxtalk.org.uk, where you can either listen or download the audio file if you wish. So it's goodbye from us. Thank you for listening, and we wish you a peaceful week.
Notice to listeners of OxTalk who may wish to use an Alexa smart speaker to access our service. To listen to OxTalk on an Alexa device, you can use the Talking Newspaper skill. You will need to first enable the skill. To do this, simply say, "Alexa, enable Talking Newspaper." Then, to listen to OxTalk, please follow this procedure. Alexa, open Talking Newspaper.
Welcome to your Talking Newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have any problems listening to OxTalk using an Alexa device, it could be due to the way that your device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set it up in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact OxTalk and we will try to help.